Attention aspiring musicians of all levels from all over the world. Want to learn to play guitar or bass like your heroes? Well, I have the guy for you. Multi-instrumentalist Corey Glazer has played with Fastball, Paula Nelson, Skyrocket, me, and many more. In fact, his song Needle Hits the Groove is our theme song. Corey's been teaching for over 2 decades and is now offering his services all over the world via Zoom. So if you want to learn rock, country, R&B or funk, folk or jazz on guitar or bass, just go to CoreyGlazer.com or follow the link in the text of this podcast and start shredding on guitar or slapping the bass like a pro with Corey Glazer at CoreyGlazer.com. Let's get down. Gang, we all know Spotify has become the ultimate app destination for music lovers. I have an account and I love it. I find new music by following Tastemaker playlists, and I make my own playlist that I share featuring music from guests that have been on the show. But did you know that aside from millions of songs, Spotify now has thousands of podcasts? All your favorites are on there, including How Did I Get Here? That's right, we are on Spotify. Just go to Spotify.com or download the app from your app store, and don't forget to follow How Did I Get Here? That's Spotify. Millions of songs, now thousands of podcasts. Start listening now.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here?
Right. Hello, I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys are all healthy, safe, and sane out there. It's a crazy fucking time, man. And I've been getting a little anxiety. Like there's like a low grade anxiety that's inhibiting my creativity a little bit. Like it's a little too, like you want stuff going on. You want some agitation, but sometimes it crosses a line and then you get a little too anxious to make stuff. It's been a weird few months, right? It's been a weird, week. This all that intensity last week kind of like sent everyone into this weird spiral, this existential spiral. You know, all you hear about is how fragile our democracy is and that it can break at any second. And what breaks it, I think, is when nobody trusts anyone. And I think what we're experiencing now is this. So much misinformation has been fed to people, and they're angry, and they want to fight this fight that isn't really worth fighting. You know what I mean? They're fighting for a lie, and it's insane. And obviously, the people on the other side can't believe, you know, the current administration, because they've not really told the truth this whole time. Not that anybody's telling the truth, but this has been a little bit ridiculous. It's been tough, you know. I watched this front line. This might help you guys out to understand where the divide comes from in our country. And there's a great episode of Frontline. You can find it on YouTube, and I think it's called The Great American Divide or something like that. But you can look it up. It's a two-parter. It's like 4 hours in total. But they talk to everyone from both sides of everything, and they kind of go through how this country ended up in this place that we're in right now. You know, a lot of people think Donald Trump did this. He didn't do it. He fed it. He was the right guy to feed this monster of a divide that's growing in our country. And he was the perfect person for it, because he thrives on that kind of division, having an enemy, someone to fight against. There are people like that. You know, they don't really do well unless they're fighting against someone. So anyway, I hope you're doing well. I hope you're getting your head around it. Check out that Frontline thing if you're interested in learning sort of like how we got to this place we're at. How did we get here? Ha ha ha. That wasn't even funny. And speaking of how did I get here, I have a great show for you guys today. The amazing Daisy O'Connor returns to the show. I don't know if this is her fifth time or sixth time on the show, but she's been coming on since about 2014. She's been putting out records like consistently. She's been doing these mixtapes, but now she's got a brand new single out called Evergreen. It just came out. You can find it on Bandcamp. It was recorded at Public Hi-Fi here in Austin, that Jim Eno from Spoon Studio, fantastic studio. It's a great song, and it sounds fantastic. Daisy is an amazing songwriter. I've actually had the chance to I actually met her on the show, I think, pretty much. like in 2014 or 2015 or something, I met her on the show and we became friends and we played together. She's sung with my band. I've played keyboards in her band. We hang out, we're friends. And I haven't seen her for a while, for obviously over the pandemic, but even before the pandemic, I hadn't seen her too much except for at her shows and not really gotten to talk to her very much. But she had suffered from a coronavirus that was before this coronavirus. You know what I'm saying? Like the coronavirus is a style of virus, I guess. But she did have some kind of coronavirus that left her kind of, her immune system kind of fucked up. And so she's been, you know, basically sheltering in place the whole time. She's got a couple people she gets to see, but otherwise she's just chilling and staying safe, which we all should probably be doing because the numbers are going up so high. We're in stage 5 here in Austin, which is a little scary. Anyway, back to Daisy O'Connor. You can find her at daisyoconnor.com. This song Evergreen is fantastic. She also has a Patreon that she does. You can go be a member of that, and she gives her art, her followers new music all the time and videos and stuff. And she'll be performing, doing a live stream next Thursday, January 21st at 6 p.m. Central Time on Facebook Live. So Daisy O'Connor, my dear friend, I love her. I miss her. This pandemic has kept us apart. But for now, you can enjoy our conversation. So do it. This is me and Daisy O'Connor chatting it up. Let's get down. Seen you in a long time.
I know.
I haven't seen you in a year.
Yeah, probably more, like around the time that I released that last or I had a show at Cosmic. Yeah, it's probably the last time I saw you.
Oh yeah, remember Cosmic? I tried to go there on Monday and they were closed.
Oh wow. Well, hey, good for them. I mean, slow the spread.
Yeah. It feels a little safe when I'm there. That's one of the places.
Yeah, they got outdoor space.
Yeah. Have you found yourself like finding a couple of places where you can go and kind of seem like you're in a world that you used to be?
Absolutely not. No. Abso-fucking-lutely not. No, I'm not going anywhere. I'm going zero places and I'm seeing... there's three friends that are all completely staying at home, live at home, work at home, and I'll hang out with them outside and masked. But I'm taking zero chances. And, you know, there's bars that I'll walk by sometimes on my walk, and I'll see people there that I know. And I'm like, man, I know that guy has no boundaries. He's not wearing a mask. He's the close talking, won't take a hint kind, you know? Too many people know who I am. So yeah, I'm not going anywhere. It's like 99% of people are cool. And then there's that one fucking guy. So I'm just trying to keep myself healthy and safe, man.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard. It's hard to do that.
Unfortunately so. Yeah. It's interesting seeing how different places have responded and more of a collective way that seems caring. And, you know, a lot of places don't have a problem with it because they shut it down when they had one case. They were like, we're just going to completely get this shut down.
Yeah.
New Zealand, for example, Taiwan, you know, places like that.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to be like that is what I'm trying to say. It doesn't have to be the way it is here. But unfortunately, because of the way things are with the American spirit and government and everything, the independent vibe everybody seems to be addicted to here. It is the way that it is, and we're experiencing tremendous loss.
Are you going? Yeah. Oh, no, it's terrible. Are you going to the grocery store and stuff?
No. I was going until, I'm doing pickup. I was going until like late March, early April, and I was like, these people are not acting right. Every time I went, it was like a bad, bad thing. So I was just like, you know what? I'm going to be like one less person in a store.
That's really all you can do, right?
all I can do. One less person. My action. I believe our actions matter, you know. If everybody's coming together on something, that's going to say a lot. So I'm just trying to do what I can do.
Yeah.
I know it probably sounds self-righteous and also like very entitled and privileged, right? But I'm just trying to stay safe. You know, like a lot of people can't just stay home. You
you're
know,
right.
a lot of
you're
people
right.
have
yeah.
to have to go to work and they have to deal with these people that aren't taking it seriously. So that's intense.
Yeah, it is intense. I just went to the beach with my family. And we were there for 3 weeks, but everyone tested before we went, and it was,
it's great.
Yeah.
Totally. And y'all were healthy. That's fantastic. You got to do that, Johnny. What a once in a lifetime thing, getting to hang with your family on the beach for that long. That's super special.
Super special. So when did you record this great song, Evergreen? This song's fucking great. And hold on really quick before we get too far into this. That's you on the piano?
Just a few of the parts.
The little solo part?
Some of it is. Yeah, totally.
Dude, that's fucking killer.
It's so weird. Like, I don't know how to produce anything. I don't know how to record. I don't know how to play piano, but I hear the parts in my head. So just like me trying to like get it down, it's like I could explain it to someone that knows how to play piano, or I could just fuck around and figure it out myself. So that's what I did.
I love when you do stuff. You know, you know I'm a fan. I don't have to say that twice.
Thank you. I appreciate that so much.
So this song is great.
Coming from you.
How did you end up working at Public Hi-Fi, which people know as the Jim Eno studio? By some people, it's affectionately known as Eno Land, Eno World, Jim Eno from Spoon. That's a cool studio.
It's so cool. God. So Gregory White, who plays in my band, he's played both bass and guitar with me and also played bass and guitar on this track. He'd recently had a tour of the studio or possibly done some work there. I can't recall. And he was like, you know, it's a pretty great studio. We should check it out. His friend Matt Gerard does most of the producing engineering out of there. When Jim's not working, it's Matt. So we met with Matt, and it was just like all the good vibes. Love the space. Matt's just so cool, so supportive and kind and chill. And yeah, just a supremely good crew did I have on this song. So I feel really lucky that we got to come together. It was December 2019 that we recorded it. And I'd hoped to release it at that Cosmic show last year, but wasn't quite ready. And then it was ready in March, and I was like, oh, this isn't the time.
No.
And it still is not the time. It's going to release Inauguration Week. It's going to actually come out at like the absolute worst time. So I'm just like riding through the chaos, you guys.
Oh, shit. I didn't even think about that. It came out this week. And that.
Well, I dropped it on. Yeah, I dropped it on Bandcamp. But the like global distribution is Inauguration Week. So it's the 22nd that it's coming out.
Oh, okay. This is going to come out next week, so because you're gonna do a live stream on the 21st.
Yes,
at
look at
6
you.
PM.
You're up.
I know.
Yes, I thought happy hour for my West Coast peeps and me.
That's very good. all right, so let's get back to this song. This song, you wrote it obviously before the quarantine, but somehow feels like it's connected to it. You know what I mean?
Yes. Well, I think that's because for me, social distancing and separation and isolation are not new things. These are very old themes. Without getting too much into it, I've had a lot of health stuff that's forced me to kind of semi-quarantine for a really long time. So I'd already been pretty much home for 4 months dealing with health stuff. You know, going to a show here and there, but like really trying to get better. And South by Southwest 2020 was going to be like my big coming back on the scene moment. And that did not happen. So it's just kind of like, yeah, I've been in it for a while, you guys.
So you
the
were
song is a result of that.
Yeah. So it came out on Bandcamp. Let me ask you this. What day did it come out? Wednesday?
It accidentally came out last night. I thought I was going to have it come out all on the same day, but I accidentally pushed the wrong thing. And the point is, I really don't care at this point. I'm just like, oh, great. One less thing to worry about. Because I always like to like do a little pre-release Bandcamp thing anyway. So I was going to like set it up. Yeah, but it just came out instantly. And I was like, you know what? I could be upset about that. But there's a lot of upsetting things in the world. So, you know, it's all good.
Yeah.
There's an Amazon guy at the door that is not for me. I got to yell at him just a second. Hey, it's the back house. Right back there. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's actually under the carport. Yeah, that way. Yep, yep, yep. Good luck. I do not support Amazon, but my neighbors unfortunately do. So there's a lot of lost people on our property at all times.
That happens here at my apartments. You know why? Because the odd numbers are downstairs and the even numbers are upstairs. So I always see like delivery people looking very confused.
That's a nightmare.
Like this apartment should be right in between yours and your next door neighbors. Where is it?
Totally. Yeah. And we have so many folks here. It's just kind of like, oh man, who's it for? Oh, okay. It's that'll be that guy. But yeah.
So your piano solo is awesome.
Thank you. Yeah. My big piano solo.
Was it a regular piano? Cause it sounds like an electric piano kind of.
We just like ran it through some weird distortions and shit. I don't remember exactly what we did, but we had fun getting it to sound cool. There's also like some synthy stuff and like just there's a million weird keyboards there. So we just tested a bunch of things out and Josh kind of took the lead on the synthy stuff because he'd kind of like already produced out a version of the track because he's a nerd like that. And I appreciate that because I don't really have that skill set. My brain's just not with the engineering. I've tried. I want to pay the professionals to do good work rather than me sweat it out personally. So, yeah.
You know what I like, and it's something that I kind of connected with when I don't know if you've heard this. I know I'm old, and I'm like, hey, have you heard the new McCartney record? It's really swinging from this 79-year-old guy. But it is. It's got a cool vibe. It's just a dude in his house doing his thing. And it seems like you're able to move fluidly between, like, these epic lo-fi four-track records and, like, studio records and almost like a hip hop artist would do like mixtapes, which of course is the name of your like lo-fi throwdown albums. You know, because to me those are they're just as valid as the regular ones, but it's just not as much money put into. I mean, quote unquote production.
We recorded it on cassette. Yeah, it's like a literal cassette production, like old tape machines from like the 80s and shit and 90s. So. You're totally right about that. It's way more lo-fi, and it's cool to hear that you take them all seriously. I mean, I definitely do, but I also recognize, like, out in the world, you know, you see how your songs do when they're stacked up against each other. It's like, all right, people don't like the lo-fi shit as well. That's okay.
But you got to do – there's some shit you got to be out there doing for you, you know?
Totally. Yeah, I mean, I kind of would argue that in a way – it's all for me, but also like none of it is. I don't know if that makes sense to you, but it's like, sure, I needed to create it, something that came out of me and through me, composite sketches of people I know, stories of my life, feelings, emotions, etc., processing traumas, whatever. But it's also like, hopefully it goes beyond me and my ego and my own limited experiences. Like I would hope it can transcend that and reach someone else. But ultimately they're all a passion project, you know, self-produced and self published art, right?
Yeah. But I mean, that's not a bad thing in this day and age. You know? I mean, it's not like this would have been real hard to do in like the 70s, you know?
Oh, yeah. Like impossible because of the technological limitations of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we can all do it now. Everybody can make art. I mean, that's really not true. I do have access to a lot of technology at my fingertips and a lot of amazing other artists they get to work with. But so it is a privilege. But it's a lot more accessible than ever before, right? Lucky us.
Yeah. Yeah, in some ways it's good. In other ways, you know, a lot of shitty people are working on the same playing field as the other people. Where before there seemed to be like some kind of like, you have to make it through the guards. You know what I mean?
Totally. Yeah. And it was only a certain type of artist that would. And now we're getting a lot more good art, I think, ultimately, because there aren't those gatekeepers. But yeah, we're also getting just a lot of everything. And my hope always with that stuff is like, sure, maybe there's somebody whose art is just like terrible, but like, I don't think that's really true usually. Like, usually there's somebody that likes it and feels served by that, even if it's only a couple people. I don't think that makes it any less valid.
Yeah. Yeah. You have nice lighting on your face right now.
Thank you. It is from the actual sun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I can close the curtain. Actually, I got these curtains because we talked. You were like, I bought curtains today. I was like, that's a thing you can do. We're adults. I'm going to get curtains too. So thanks, Johnny. Now I have a curtain.
I think they're curtains are actually fun. You know, when I started live streaming, let's talk about this. How many live streams have you done since the lockdown?
So here's my deal with live streams, Johnny. I used to do a bunch of them. I got a lot of people on the West Coast. That's where I'm from. I really got burnt out on it like maybe 3 or 4 years ago, kind of stopped doing them. And now it's like the thing everyone's doing. But my whole deal has been like, I don't feel like I need to be out there hustling it right now. Like, there's a pandemic. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of people that like can't make rent today. That's not me. You know what I mean? I'm okay. So I've done, I think, probably five or six different live streams and like some little private things. Some of them have been private. You know, people will like hit me up to do like birthday messages and like things like that, like a lot of little things. But I'm trying not to be like pushing myself all the time, because this is supposed to be my year off to write anyways and just like do my little private gigs I don't have to talk about online. So, you know, it's now going to be like 2 years of doing that, which is fine. But yeah, not doing too many live streams. I'm really at peace with that, and I enjoy them when I do them.
That's good. Right, right. I've done it. I mean, I guess I do it.
Totally. You do, and you're in multiple projects, so you're doing it in multiple ways.
Yeah. The full band live stream is pretty interesting. I want to go back to playing shows to people. I mean, I enjoy the live stream, and it's cool, and the first couple of times you do it, there's like an unusual amount of money that you didn't really expect. Yes. And then you're like, why have I been traveling or going anywhere?
Absolutely. Why am I paying a band?
Yeah. speaking of that, like, you did this. You saying that Joshua is in your band regularly?
Oh, when I'm so lucky to have him. Yes, he's actually been quarantined in Germany this year. So I've seen him once since lockdown happened.
Quarantine in Germany would be... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I can't wait to play with him again. What were you going to say about quarantine in Germany?
Quarantine in Germany sounds like a really good album name.
Maybe he's working on that right now. He already released one. I think it's called Berlin something. I don't know. There's a Berlin song on there. So that's where he is. Check him out. J Halp on Spotify. He's got a really cool album he produced over there in quarantine.
Yeah. So before we get off of Evergreen and start talking about other stuff, people can get it on Bandcamp. When this comes out, they can get it on Bandcamp. And then by the end of the week, they can listen to it on Spotify and all the stuff where they go. But go
all
to Bandcamp.
Places.
Why not just
check it out?
Why not just drop? Can't just buy a song? What's wrong with you?
Yeah, I mean, if you can, I understand some people can't, which is why I do the Facebook Lives free. Anyone can pay if they want to, but I really want this to be accessible to everyone that wants it, which is also why it's not just going to live on Bandcamp. It's going to Spotify and everywhere, because, man, not everybody has the ability to pay for stuff like that. I understand that music is a luxury, you know?
I guess it was mean to me.
It shouldn't be.
No.
Some people can pay, though. If you can, please do, because, Lord, my taxes are going to be abysmal. My income is, it's all a joke, but I'm fine. I live in a shotgun shack, you guys. It's fine. I'm living cheap and dirty long term. That's the thing about being an artist. We have been kind of, like, preparing for this our entire careers, because you have, like, feast and famine for years and years and years and years and years. So you learn how to, like, ferret money away and save and all that shit. And also, like, how to ask for help. That's been a big deal for me. With like Patreon and all that.
Yeah.
Huge. Thank God for Patreon right now. Whew.
What have you been putting? Obviously you've been putting a lot of your artistic energy into there. You deliver like when someone signs up for your Patreon, what do they get monthly?
So usually I do one post a month, cause it is a monthly thing. There's also an option to do it annually. Now they just decided to do that. So I'm sure someone could decide to do that. But yeah, I post stuff I'm working on. I post occasionally covers. I don't love doing that, but like patrons will request covers. Like I did a Jimi Hendrix Burning the Midnight Lamp last month, and that one turned out super cool. So it'll be like some videos, some MP3s. Yeah, mostly just that, though. I'm not like trying to reinvent any wheels. I'm just kind of maintaining, you know. Yeah. Here's some songs. This is what I do. I used to do like 2 songs a month and they were always like brand new. And then I was like, you know what? I don't feel like this is like the best use of my time and energy. And like sometimes I'll drop a song a week. Like if I'm dropping an album or an EP or a project, it always goes to Patreon first. Sometimes exclusively, sometimes just before Bandcamp and Spotify. Like, and
the mixtapes were Patreon exclusives, yeah, at first, right?
Yeah. Mixtapes, Analog Session, Ether, yeah, all of those were made using, well, Ether did have also a Kickstarter because I wanted to do it a little bit up more than the others. It was just like not lo-fi basically and cost a lot more to produce. But yeah, pretty much Patreon's funded all those albums. And now it's like, sure, I'm not in the studio, but it's like helping me continue to write and sustain my life as an artist. And yeah, I don't get the vibe that anyone on there is like, what the fuck, we don't get a new album this year, Daisy. Like everyone's been supremely cool. People have like upped their pledge amounts, which is just wild to me. Cause I'm like, man, everyone's like losing their jobs. All my gigs are canceled till probably mid to late 2021, you know? And people are like up in their pledges. It's just so inspiring and heartwarming. And I just, yeah, man. And also, like, here's the thing I will say, like, I wouldn't have a Patreon if I hadn't gotten in that horrible car accident on tour and like decided like, shit, I can't like play without hiring people because I can't carry my gear. Like my back's not working. Right. It's not going to be okay for like a long time, if ever. So I like really had to learn how to rely on my community, bandmates for the first time. Like I just had to learn how to like get humble and stop being this like individualistic, independent, DIY everything person and realize like, okay, it is okay to ask for help. People are only going to help you if they're able to and want to. No one's like crying over this or like sacrificing in some major way. And people seem happy to do it. And I'm just thankful I get to make art, you know? Mm-hmm. So I would say like for artists who are thinking about doing a Patreon, it can be a really positive experience and it doesn't have to take like 50 hours a month, you know?
Yeah.
It can be an achievable thing for you to do to connect with the people that really care and offer them a little more than they're going to get on Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah. Yeah. And they also give you a little bit more than just a like. You know, they go and actually listen to your thing, you know?
Totally. Yeah. And sometimes comments are very sweet. And even if they don't, sometimes there's not a lot of interaction. I'm not going to lie. People aren't on Patreon like they're on Facebook and Instagram. It's, you know, an email goes to your inbox and you open it if you have time and are able to, you know? So it's not the same like dopamine kick for anyone that social media has been designed to give us.
Right.
But it is, I'd say, I mean, I patronize multiple artists. I always have. I think it's important to do that. And I always enjoy getting their little messages and listening when I can. It's like this cool little treat.
Yeah. So, you were in quarantine before we had to be in quarantine, when quarantine wasn't cool.
And yeah, then, for sure.
And then when the South by Southwest thing came up, what have you been doing?
Oh my God. So it's extreme to say I was in quarantine before quarantine, but also it's not. Like, I feel like I need to explain that a little more. In December 2019, I had a horrible coronavirus. I had one in November, got super sick. I was doing gigs twice a week at a daycare. I had like my 4 or 5 rotating gigs every week, but like 2 of the regular ones that I always had every week were singing for these little kids, like literally 2 hours a week. But I just kept getting sick. So I basically, after the second one in December, I had lung problems and a cough until March. So I was already like really struggling. I felt like I had enough voice to get through my gigs, but not to like go to a show and try to talk to anyone,
right.
Not to do like anything extra. So I wasn't in strict quarantine, but I was basically in, if I'm not at a gig, I just can't be out.
Right.
I just can't. I got this cough. I got this thing. I'm just like in and out of gigs, got all my cough drops and throat stuff. So I'm not coughing on anybody. I know I'm not contagious. You know, I saw a doctor because I was just like, I have health insurance and I was just like, I don't want to be like getting anyone sick, you know? which I wasn't. But yeah, I just, that gave me a lot of perspective. I've actually had these chronic health problems related to a coronavirus from 2014 that I got when I was working at Fayetteville Roots Festival. So I'm working this festival. I come back. Pultz and I actually got the exact same thing that weekend. We were out there together with a whole bunch of friends. And then like a bunch of them went to Sisters Folk Fest and they were all sick there. So I've had chronic health problems since that coronavirus. So as soon as I was starting to hear about the one that's happening now, you know, C19, early in 2020, I was like, oh, hell no. I've already been taken down recently and in 2014 by a coronavirus.
And it's stuff that left you with like,
another one.
Right. And it's stuff that left you with lingering problems.
Yes. I have chronic cyanitis. I don't think it will ever go away. I hope that it does. But I've been working on it in like every woo-woo way possible and maintaining the health that I have long term. But it takes daily effort in a way that I never imagined my life would be. Like I've had to change pretty much everything about the way I take care of myself to be able to maintain having a voice and performing for the last 6 years or whatever.
Shit, man, I'm sorry.
7 years. Yeah, it's stuff you don't wanna talk about because we live in this culture that prizes being able-bodied and right, shames right. anyone that is not able-bodied and that has health issues. And I know that I don't have the worst ones. I'm probably not even like qualified to even talk about these things compared to a lot of people, but I also struggle with that stuff.
Right. But I mean, someone's health problem might be this giant thing and someone's health problem might not be this giant thing that keeps you hospitalized forever, but everyone's,
right.
It's still your health problem. It's your health.
Totally. So, anyway, and like, I was just losing my voice all the time when I was figuring out like how to deal with these chronic issues. And slowly figured it out. I'm really, really thankful to have pretty good health now. But I have the best health I've had in years because I'm home all the time with my air filter and like able to eat foods that help me stay healthy and shit, you know, drinking enough water and taking all my supplements. So it's humbling being in quarantine and realizing like, okay, this is actually like my best life. Ouch.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. It is what it is, man. I'm just trying to keep it real on the Johnny podcast. I hope I'm not bringing you guys down too much. Shit.
Like, I'm waiting for them to say something. Someone's in their car right now going, no, Daisy, it's okay. I love you.
God damn it. Pause for commentary. I love that.
yeah, give them a minute, you know, the listener, the guy walking down the trail, the lady yes. climbing at the gym on the climber.
Oh, it's fantastic. Oh.
When I asked you what you've been up to during the thing, are you going to, like, when?
Oh, yeah. I didn't even answer that.
Yeah. That's all right.
I still can. I want to.
Okay. The question, it's still open. The question
okay,
was,
perfect.
What have you been doing? At once, okay, once, what it, have became, been doing once since? It became March 7th, what's been going on?
Yeah. Okay. March 13th was my last gig, actually. I was going a little longer than some.
Mine too.
Hey, Friday the 13th. What a fucking witching hour for us in our musical careers. Ugh.
Well, can I quickly tell you this and ask? Let me know if this happened to you. My last gig, I had a solo show March 13th, and then I was playing at something in Tomball with Skyrocket on the 14th, and then we were playing a big St. Patrick's Day celebration on the 15th, which was the Sunday, a family daytime festival. And so the 13th, like, I was calling the guy throughout the day, like, you sure this is going to, you know? And then, like, it was a show, and that show, I don't know if yours was, but mine was fucking weird. The vibe was
so
weird. Everything about it was weird.
Yeah.
And
totally.
And then the 14th, like, they're like, no, it's still going on in Tomball. And then, like, around noon, we got the call. Like, no, this isn't happening. And then the other people waited to cancel till the next morning, and then everything just started falling. So, okay, so you play this gig the 13th, yep. And what happened when you woke up the 14th?
Well, it really took, like, I'd say 3 or 4 days for all my South By stuff to cancel, but it just slowly started dropping. And, like, one thing I was supposed to do, it was, like, an all-week-long gig, like, my biggest gig, like, helping out artist relations with my friend's event, which is just, like, something I like doing and I'm good at and I can make money doing it, you know? South By is not always a money maker for all artists. I have some where I'd make a lot, some where I don't. So I've learned to supplement. Anyways, they were like holding out to the last possible second. So I was like, up until like March, like 14th, 15th, just like, am I going to work tomorrow or not? Am I going to work tomorrow or not? So that sucked. And then it was like, oh shit, everything's canceled. And now I'm just sitting around depressed. I don't like sitting around. I don't like watching stuff on Netflix. I'm just like a really busy, active person usually. So, I don't even, like, I feel like I've like blocked out early quarantine. It's like, what was that even? I don't know. Like, I took a lot of walks. I cried a lot. I wrote in my journal. I freaked out about the world. I also was like, kind of like making the best of it the first few months.
Right.
You know what?
Yeah.
I pivoted. I had my couple weeks of being just really bummed.
Right.
And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to make the best of this. I'm going to create. I'm going to write. I'm going to make stuff. I'm going to get all into this creative shit. I rented a piano. I was like, I'm going to learn how to play keyboard, you know, all that shit. I was like really into it. And then George Floyd happened. Well, Ahmed was the first one, Ahmed Arbery. I was like, that guy got literally lynched by his neighbors. He's just running, taking a run, jogging, and his neighbors shoot him. That was a big wake up for me. And then George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. And at that point, I was just like, okay, I need to step back and learn about the world I live in. Because I'm from a place that is completely settled by white people and as like a white place.
Yeah.
Very intentionally. Oregon and Washington were, Oregon in particular, where I'm not from, but Washington also, just really horrific histories of racism, genocide of indigenous people, and just like no black people live there. They just don't. Black people I know are like, oh yeah, you don't fucking go there. It's just dangerous in the Northwest. So that's stuff that I learned this year, you know, 2020 rather.
Yeah, me too.
It was kind of, yeah, isn't that wild? We are so, incredibly privileged that we didn't spend our whole lives, thinking about this stuff and being afraid of it and impacted by it directly, you know? So this has been my like educating myself year. I've taken a fuck ton of online classes, online groups, studies, just reading so many books. I still have a thick stack of books. I'm doing all this like trauma work. Yeah, I'm just trying to like get into my own stuff because I realize like people want to say like, oh, what happened at the Capitol was like freaky, horrible people. And like everyone wants to distance himself. Even like Trump is trying to save his ass and distance himself, right? But I don't think we can distance ourselves from that because that's like how I was raised. The people I was raised around, the place I come from is like that same mentality. So it is within me and it is carried in my blood. So I'm trying to do my
exercise that
my work through that stuff. And I realize it will probably be lifelong work.
Yeah.
There's no easy answers. You know, you can't just be like, well, I'm not like that. And then it disappears.
Right. That was, I feel like that before George Floyd and all of that stuff and kind of taking a look inward, I felt like my whole stance is like, well, hey, I'm not racist, so I'm cool, right? And then you just kind of groove through life. I'm not.
Totally.
But I tolerated a lot of, and also didn't even realize because of your own privilege that like, oh, I didn't realize. It wasn't until this podcast, even way before, I'll say this, before George Floyd, I want to say it might have been this guy, Mike Melano, I had talked to. But it was an African-American guy, and he was telling me the story about moving to a new town and in a neighborhood that was mostly white people. And one of his black friends was like, what are you doing, like, going fucking jogging at night? Are you crazy?
Yeah.
And I was like, why can't you jog at night? And he was like, what do you mean, why can't I jog at night? And then he explained to me that, like, a black guy running down the street is something that people just call the police on. And that never even occurred to me as being, you know what I mean?
Totally. And I think a lot of males are, you know, think that like, oh, why wouldn't I run at night? Why wouldn't I do a thing? But it's like also so if you're a man of color, you have a different experience. If you're a woman of any color, of course, the darker you are, the more endangered. But like, that's like the first thing my grandma said to me. And the last thing, like every time I talked to her, every phone conversation ever, don't walk outside at night. Don't go outside at night. Don't, you know, it's like this thing that gets drilled into you for different reasons, of course.
I find that my sister, it wasn't until I'm trying to, what's the movie that came out that was the big movie when they were way back a long time ago when movies first started.
Don't ask me.
The Birth of a Nation.
Oh, okay.
I'm not that old. So, but there is that thing that was introduced in that movie of like black men are looking to, you know, rape white women. Like that's their, yeah. That's just kind of their role. And when I can't remember what the name of the documentary is about that and kind of like the repercussions of that. But when I was learning about, generational trauma, you know, that's passed down from all these people, that I realized, oh, it's also in white people as well, because my ex-stepmom, who I would never listen to this podcast in a million years, so I don't mind talking about her, and my sister, who also wouldn't, that lady's mom was a real racist lady and had that sort of like view that they're savages. So then it starts sort of cleaning itself up as the generations go, right? The sort of overt, mm-hmm. the N-word leaves the thing. But mm-hmm. while these people don't think they're racist, they really are. Like, they, you could see it when the protests started happening. Just like you could see it in our president the other day when he was like, we love you, you're special people. Yeah. Just go home. It's all good.
Oh my God, his tweets from May 29th compared to that one is just, it said it all.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so many things I want to say. I saw a lot of white people, musicians, et cetera, posting things around June 1st that were like, of course, many people just put the black box with no words, but some people were like directly statements like, white people, this isn't our problem. And I just couldn't disagree with that more. Like, I think this is white people's problem.
Yeah.
I don't think it's actually black people's. I mean, it's an issue that impacts them. But I don't think it's like their work to do. I think it's white people's work.
Exactly.
And I think that the more, honestly, I think that people like you and I, as much as we want to say, like, I'm not racist, I don't think it's fair to say that, because we are all part of this system and this world,
yep.
that is perpetuating these things, and we're benefiting from it every, yep. day. So, like, yes, I want to act in alliance with people of color, and I want to work with them, but I can't say like, oh, you know, I have it all figured out, because I just don't.
Right, right,
and I know I'm going to make mistakes, sure. and I know I'm going to say the wrong thing. And I know that's probably going to happen my whole life because of where I come from. And I think that's where I come from is not a weird or freaky version of America. It's like actually how a lot of the country is.
Yeah.
So I like what you said too about like the generational trauma and how like white people have it too. There's actually a really fantastic book I would recommend for you and anyone listening who is interested in this work. It's called My Grandmother's Hands by Rezma Menakem. And he gets into generational trauma in white European bodies and how that got brought to to North America and colonized, and trauma that got passed down through black bodies. And also he talks a lot about police and the trauma that police officers carry and how that is passed on rather than checked and healed and processed. So I think it's kind of like an all-encompassing, really good resource for us as we look into these issues within ourselves and our world deeper.
I'm so glad that you spent time looking inward and not just like, well, I watched Tiger King during the quarantine.
Oh my God. I mean, we all watched Tiger King.
I'm not going to lie. I watched it in one day.
Oh yeah. I think we all did. It's horrifying. I mean, he's just another Trump. And I could also say like, he's just another Daisy O'Connor. You know, he's just another person that's like, got his own shit going on, and that's all he cares about. And I don't say that I am that way or I want to be that way, but have I been that way in the past?
Sure.
Yes. And have I been in Patreon creator workshops this last month where people talking, black women, not calling them out, but they were like, you guys, you just need to go out there and you need to like be your own version of Trump. You need to just be like evangelizing whatever your brand is, just 110% all the time. I was like, man, Maybe I would have related to that at some other point in my history, but since 2016 in that presidential campaign, I've just felt such a deep shame as a person who's out there talking about my shit and self-promoting. I'm just like, man, I see how these exact same tools are being used in like a really harmful way. And I don't want to perpetuate that. So yeah, I'm definitely like deep in the self-reflective mode with a lot of things, obviously.
Yeah. And you're also, what's going on with yoga?
Oh yeah. Okay. In September, I was actively looking into where in the world do I need to go because I feel unsafe all the time. And when I look back on my life, I realize a million different situations where, oh, I felt unsafe then, I felt unsafe then. And it's just like, since I was born until the present, the constant has been, I feel unsafe in this country as the person that I am. Where can I go? And I was really looking into moving other places, immigration, what languages I would have to learn, like all of these things. And then I realized like I might go somewhere else and not actually feel safe there either. This could be something that's potentially passed through my bloodline with epigenetics. I've been getting really into studying inherited trauma and like the actual like science behind it. And there's probably a real basis too. Like there's probably very real reasons that I, as a, you know, female bodied queer person should feel afraid in the world that we live in. Right. But what can I do with that? And at that exact time I came across a yoga teacher training that was trauma informed yoga teacher training. And their whole deal is like yoga in the Western world has been like completely colonized. It's like Lululemon pants and like skinny white chicks. And that's not our shit. We want it to be for like all bodies, for all people. Like nobody's doing any fancy poses, like poses that every single person can find a way to do, like modify, you know, for bigger bodies, disabled bodies, et cetera. And I was just like, that's my shit. That's what I care about.
The people's yoga.
So I started that. The people's yoga. Yeah, totally. And like recognizing too that like we're going to make mistakes, right? We're going to have biases. We bring all of that into the world. So like, this is an active process rather than like, I took this one class and now I know everything, right? It's a life practice. So I'm finishing that up and concurrently just began a full-time 200-hour yoga teacher training with the same folks. So it's very trauma-focused. It's very much like, how do we calm our nervous systems? How do we release? So like on Wednesday when all this crazy shit was going down with Congress, I guess this will air differently, but on January 6th, many of us felt triggered in a lot of ways. And like, what do I do when that happens? What are my resources? So for me, it's kind of about like, what are the tools in my tool belt? How can I not feel afraid all of the time? And how can I like share that with my community? So that's the questions that I'm working through in that program right now. And I'm not planning to become a yoga teacher. I'm not planning to like lead classes in any traditional kind of capacity, but I hope that I'm able to feel less freaked out myself and potentially help the people that I love and work with, potentially as a yoga therapist, become less freaked out and, you know, less activated in their nervous systems.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, that's a long answer.
No, that was a good answer. Can I say something a little less deep and maybe a little more shallow?
Please.
Your hair looks fucking this great, man.
Oh, thank you. It's just doing its thing. But I did get an outdoor haircut in October. Okay. So,
well, it's got like a 70s shag. It's kind of like in the,
Thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying not to look ugly over here. I mean, I got to look at myself.
You're doing a great job. So,
thanks. I am my own one true love, so I'm just trying to keep it fresh over here for myself.
Daisy, we went and saw Wonder Woman when it came out in the movies together, remember?
Yes!
Did you see the new one yet?
Not yet.
Me neither.
Have you seen it?
No.
Someone on the internet was like, it was such a disappointment. And I was like, oh no, but that's one person's opinion. So I should still see it.
Are you at a point like with, just an aside, like entertainment wise during COVID, do you find yourself gravitating towards lighter fare? Or?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, this goes back to like, how's your quarantine been? And I'm like, my quarantine has been forever. I've always been into lighthearted and funny media. I started doing working with domestic violence and sexual assault survivors when I was 19. That was my first real job, like outside of college internships and stuff. So at that point, I was just like, I got no space for nothing scary. And I know how real the world is.
Yeah.
I know how, you know what I mean? Like when I saw that stuff happen on January 6th at the Congress, I was like, oh yeah, this is familiar. This is like, we were afraid every day that those types of people were going to break in and threaten us because I worked at a DV shelter. So this is familiar type of person that we're dealing with Donald Trump and the people that follow him. It is very familiar to me and it is very deep. So I only watch funny shit, basically. I only watch comedy. I only watch lighthearted shit. I watch that fucking British baking show. Like, whoa, I don't even care how stupid it is. I'm just like, give me something lighthearted. Give me something funny. I must laugh because life is heavy as fuck. And yeah. I don't want to just be up in that all the time. That's where my work is with the trauma and the deep heart stuff. But that doesn't have to be what I spend my whole life doing. Right, like I got to dance. Right. I got to move. I got to sing. I got to walk. I got to celebrate. I got to laugh every single fucking day. Every day. Hold space for joy. Mm.
There's something that I feel bad about sometimes. But I do have there's a bigoted part of me where, I'll be honest, like the angry white man is scary to me.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I think it's scary to like everyone.
Yeah. I feel like I have maybe you and I both have the reaction to the white man, the angry white man. That, you know, my stepmom and my sister have to a black guy in a hoodie just going to buy a candy bar, a Snickers, at 7-Eleven. Because there are some times when I see a guy like, let's take, for instance, just the Viking guy or even the guy that sat at Pelosi's desk, like that guy.
Ugh,
his energy was brutal, man.
Rough vibes. That is not a happy, healthy person who's like living their best life, you know? That is a person probably with a lot of generational trauma who is just really hurting, really scared, getting fed a ton of scary propaganda that's like super convincing to them based on the lens that they see the world. It confirms all of their biases. So like I have compassion and understanding for that person, but that doesn't mean that I'm like, oh, cool, bro. You know, it's like, no, we have to hold these people accountable for their actions.
Right.
So much is at stake here. It always has been. And it's, the meme that keeps going around, I laugh when I see it, but it's true, is like, well, that escalated quickly over 4 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep, exactly. And I don't think we're through it yet. And I think we got a long road to go if we're going to actually process this and heal from it, or if we're just going to sweep it under the rug and let it keep popping out.
Yeah.
We'll see. Time will tell. I hope we do some work.
Did you, when you saw the thing from last night, which is the Thursday, the night after on the 7th, January 7th, 2021, then the president did this video that was like, it was like a completely different guy. Like this guy made a speech, I think, at some point in like 2018, this guy that we saw yesterday, whoever that was, like...
Yeah, that speech writer
President
got a second.
Jekyll or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. He's trying to save face, I'm sure. And I'm sure he has like a gun to his head making him read that.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting, the after, once this closes down, sort of to be able to hear the stories from the people in the inside and sort of look at this forensically, because I think historically it's probably just like the Germans, and I, you know, I know people get mad when you say this, but just like the Germans have to sort of have a pretty good idea of what happened with Hitler to sort of keep that book open and be like, hey guys, just look for these signs, you know.
Totally.
That we're going to have to sort of have that as well, you know, at least for the next century, to be like, hey, remember, we can't remember this is why, you know, Matthew McConaughey can't be the governor of Texas. And this like random people, just because a lot of people know them, doesn't mean that they're qualified for this kind of job. you know?
Absolutely. Just because they have a fan base doesn't mean that they're someone that's a trustworthy source.
And know? This is a fan base guy. I mean, this is a guy that just a few years before had a show on NBC on Sunday nights, 8 p.m.
For a long time, for like 11 years or something. Yeah, he had just an immense amount of fans and publicity for that time, and he rolled with it. I mean, what he did is, I can't say good in any way, but also brilliant and effective, right? Much like what Hitler did.
Right.
Brilliant and effective and terrifying. And I don't think we're through the woods. I don't think we've seen the end of it. I don't think it goes away anytime soon. I wouldn't. This is my prediction. I hope I'm wrong. Please, please, God, help me be wrong. I wouldn't be surprised if we have a decade more of dealing with this. If we deal with it again, unless it gets swept under the rug and then it just keeps popping out. But it, you know, it took a long time for Hitler to rise and it took a long time to get rid of him.
Yeah.
So if we're facing something like that, which, you know, I'm not the historian to say that we are, I think we might have a long road ahead of us addressing this, considering how divided we are and how much propaganda there is.
Yeah. Yeah, there's
what a
lot
fun
of,
podcast. Yeah. Are you glad you had me?
No, I'm glad I had you on. Well, this is something that's going through everyone's mind right now, and this will come out next week. It's not like it's going to come out like in 4 months and people are like, stop talking about that. You bummed me out when it happened.
It's such a bummer. Oh, my God. And also, like, so many people, like Black people, et cetera, are like, you're surprised by this? This is like exactly what's been going on our whole lives and for centuries. So I think it's time that we deal with our white fragility, whatever that means for us, face this stuff and really start to see what's actually going on and digging deeper into it. Not conspiracy theories, but like the actual like issues, the root causes of like patriarchy and white supremacy and like violent male entitlement that's just continuing to rise. I'm going to share one thing that a friend shared with me because I think it's really important perspective. She said that this study was done where they looked at the last 30 years and demographics of people and like who's been getting like better jobs and more income and like who's been kind of on the rise. And it's like, okay, let's face it. Women weren't allowed to open bank accounts in the 70s. You know what I mean? Like things have gotten a lot better for women. Things have gotten somewhat better for Black people, maybe on some metrics, you know. Things have gotten some better for, you know, like every group has gotten like a little bit better in the last 30 years with like how much they're making or whatever, like at least a little bit, except white men. They've just like flatlined. They're not going down, but they're not going up. And my friend said this study, which I'm of course don't even know to reference, sorry. But she said the study was like, that's why people are, white guys are all upset right now. It's not because they have less. It's because they don't have more than other people and they're used to having more. When you're used to everyone being below you, then you feel like you've lost something by being more on an even ground.
Right.
Yeah. So I think that's part of the work we have to do. Like, how do we, I'm not like a call out person. I'm like, how do we call people in? How do we heal things? How do we work through this together? Because I think that the Trump people and you and I probably have a lot more in common than like, you know, the one percenter people, you know, like the people that run the planet, like all are the working class people of the world. And I think that the struggles we face are really united. And I wish we could get on the same page about what those struggles are rather than pointing at the rapists or the, you know, it's like, who's actually raping children? White men, people that are family members. That's the actual risk. I worked in the domestic and sexual violence prevention field for a long, long, long time. The risk is not the stranger in the alley and the big sex cartel. The risk is like actually people that you know and people like Trump, people that are entitled males.
Right, right.
But and females, obviously.
It doesn't make as good of a story.
No, you're not going to like
as a boogie,
engage.
As an actual boogie man and a guy people that pops up out of the bushes.
Yeah, people want the boogeyman.
No, I understand. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's not the actual
risk. It's not your friend Larry you've known for 10 years that all of a sudden you have a couple of drinks at a fucking thing, and all of a sudden he's all of a sudden Handsy Larry or something.
Yep, it is Handsy Larry. I unfortunately have to report to everyone listening that that is the actual challenge that we face is how do we deal with the actual people in our community, their perpetrators?
Right.
Another thing I've been studying this year, not to get into it much, but is prison abolition and like policing in America. And those systems, unfortunately, aren't working to prevent or solve crime. What they're doing is increasing trauma for everyone, removing people from their families and communities, and putting them with people where they're going to get into worse trouble when they get out. Because right. they're actually
creating criminals.
Yeah, creating criminals, and those people are doing the job. They're the free labor economy in our country.
Right,
unfortunately,
exactly.
That no one wants to talk about, the 13th Amendment.
Yeah, that was
the... So we do have slavery in America. It's very legal, and that's what our prisons are doing. So we really need to get into that and work on that and help these people heal rather than perpetuating these issues.
Yeah, for those of you listening right now, the 13th Amendment, there's an actual... documentary called The 13th on Netflix. That's definitely worth watching. It's upsetting.
Yep. Yeah. But all of this stuff is so upsetting, which is why I'm like, we also need to work on our self-care, how do we ground our nervous systems? Yeah. How do we stay healthy and grounded? Because this isn't a one-time thing, or it's not wrapping up in a few weeks. It's stuff we're probably going to be dealing with our whole lives.
It's magically going to go away in April.
Yeah,
it's magically going to go away in April when it warms up, magically.
We solved for racism. Yeah. White supremacy is over. Yeah, but like, that's the thing too, is like, people are like, oh, these criminals in prison. And it's like, it's actually like a lot of disabled people, a lot of people with mental health problems and neurological differences who often are people of color. As a person from a family with a lot of neurodiversity and also mental illness, I have family members who've been imprisoned. And you look at the full picture of that person's life and you say, like, yeah, they needed help. Yeah, they needed to be removed from society. Yes, they needed all of that.
But not
but prison didn't actually.
Right.
No, prison made their problems substantially worse. And it made everything for the family substantially worse. So I'm going to get off my pulpit for now. But that's kind of where my heart is right now. It's just like, how do we bring people together? How do we stop tearing families apart? And how do we like do this healing work together? Because I think we do have a lot more in common than all the forces that are trying to separate us and say we're so polarized. It's like, well, we all do have a lot in common still.
Yeah.
Hopefully we can figure out how to talk about it.
Well, in an effort to pull us out of this,
please,
this thing, and to very abruptly change the subject, what can we expect from you on your live stream on January 21st at 6 p.m. Central Time on Facebook Live?
It's probably going to be all hits because I am so busy with 5 million different things
all
that
hits.
I just mentioned. It's probably going to be all the Daisy hits, a couple of covers. Yeah, I'm going to keep it just real simple.
You still put that in the set?
Yeah, it's usually in the set. Yep. I like playing it with the band. So
I know. It's so dreamy.
Playing solo, it's like some songs you're just like, I would never play that with a band, and some songs you're like, that's a band song. Chasers is like, it's a song we need right now, I think. Trying to bring some light to the dark days, you know, trying to share my gifts that I'm so blessed to have, and hopefully make things just a tiny, 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 tiny bit easier for somebody.
I'm good. Well, Daisy, I've missed you, and I hope that there's a day when we can go to a movie or go to a show, or walk around.
I can't wait.
I know.
It's going to be great.
This song is fucking great, Evergreen. You wrote a great song, as always, and the production on it is fantastic. You're one of my favorites, Daisy. Daisy O'Connor.
You're one of my favorites. Oh, thanks for having me on the show, Johnny.
Yeah, if you're hearing this the day it comes out, it's out on Bandcamp. So go to Bandcamp or go to Daisy's, daisyoconnor.com. That has links to everything, Patreon, everything.
Yep.
You can go find all of her other records. I highly suggest all of them.
Johnny.
Yeah.
A non-biased report.
A non-biased report. I know. I was even in the Daisy O'Connor Rock Experience Extravaganza. Which was by the name, wasn't that the name of the band at that point?
We had some funny name like that. Yeah.
Well, that isn't that.
Just for
that,
ourselves.
That gig was immortalized on video.
Oh my God. That was like my first band gig, you know, that wasn't just like me and my folky friends. Not that we weren't a band, but like that was my first kind of like taking it into the more like rock world. So you were there for that bridge moment. You were there. Yeah, I have a feeling if I looked back on that performance that I would feel deep shame because I was such a baby. But,
you know what's funny? if you don't mind me saying, and I'm, and the people don't mind listening to some more podcasts, if you're on the trail or on the, you're on the walking climbing machine, those are the only two things I imagine people doing while they're listening to this. There, you did seem that it seemed like the, there's a thing that comes from behind you when you're playing, and when you're in rehearsal, it's coming into your face. Like I remember you're facing the drummer and maybe facing another guy. And there's this sort of like, there's a thing that since I started out like that, that when I play solo, I have the opposite feeling. Cause I do remember you being like, guys, like pull it down, man. What are you, you know, this isn't the Iron Maiden like reunion concert.
Yeah.
This isn't like Judas Priest at the fucking Alamo Dome, bro. But there is something about it that, that, and I remember seeing that and thinking to myself, like she's having what I had when I first played by myself, which was like, where is that thing? Where's the, like the pushing thing. Yeah.
Yep, well, opposite.
Watching you play with a band, and I mean, that Cactus album, the Cactus release show that Aubrey opened for you, and the
Sweet Aubrey.
When was that Cosmic show that I saw you? That was right.
You know
the
what?
End of...
I think I'm getting them confused. That might have been actually. I think you came to my album release. I probably like spliced Cosmic shows into one, but that was in 2018.
No.
But I saw you. I saw you after that.
I came to Cactus. After that.
Yeah, Cactus was in 2019. Okay. Cactus was in like June 2019. But I've seen you since then, just not since quarantine.
I know.
Yeah. Well, we've talked. We're buddies.
Once again, everyone check out her single Evergreen, available on Bandcamp right now. It'll be available on all the streaming services by the end of the week. If you're listening to this the day that it comes out, DaisyO'Connor.com is the website. The song was recorded at Public Hi-Fi. Great fucking song, great records. Love you.
Love you. Thanks, Johnny.
You're welcome.
Peace.
I miss my friend Daisy O'Connor. When can we all get back together and see each other face to face? Daisy O'Connor's latest single, Evergreen, available on Bandcamp now. Go to DaisyO'Connor.com. Get involved with her Patreon. I love Daisy O'Connor. She's an incredible talent and a great friend. I do miss her incredibly throughout this time. We used to have a good time together. Go on walks, go to movies, do this kind of stuff that friends do that you're not doing anymore. DaisyO'Connor.com. Check out her single Evergreen, available on Bandcamp. And don't forget, gang, when you're out there checking out DaisyO'Connor.com, you can subscribe to this podcast wherever it is that you find podcasts, be it Spotify, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Overcast, wherever you find podcasts, you'll get a new show every Tuesday and every Friday. Yeah, let's hear the rest of this song, Evergreen, by the amazing Daisy O'Connor. Don't forget to check out her live stream on the 21st at 6 p.m. Central Time on your Facebook Live. Get involved. The great Daisy O'Connor. Have a great weekend, whatever it is you're doing. Let's get down.